comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Tech Chats are made possible by accessible event technology, making meetings, classes, webinars accessible to the blind, deaf, and deafblind. Learn more at www.accessibleevent.com. And welcome to Tech Chat 102. For the ladies, looking good equals feeling good. And now your host for this evening's event, Ricky Enger.
Good evening, everyone. I am Ricky Enger, and I have a group of incredible guests with me tonight. And we're going to have lots of fun. I just know it. We're going to be talking about something that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to get a lot of discussion in the blindness community, and I don't quite know why that is. The title of our show is Looking Good Equals Feeling Good. So what we're going to be talking about is ways that you can develop your own personal style, something that feels very comfortable to you, and something that will represent you in the best possible light in terms of your appearance. So with me tonight, we have Kara Quinn. She is a model, musician, writer, Mac guru, all-around happy, fun girl extraordinaire. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Oh, thank you for having me. Hello, all you lovelies out there. And you're too kind in the intro, too kind. I sure appreciate that.
It's all true. Also with me tonight, we have Maureen Duffy. She is the editing director of Vision Aware at www.visionaware.org. She has written numerous articles on several of the topics that we're covering tonight, and she's got a lot of other articles as well. She works as a vision rehabilitation teacher, and she does a bit of modeling herself. Welcome to the show, Maureen.
Hi, thank you. It's always nice when someone who's a writer like me gets to use their voice every once in a while. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. And last but certainly not least, we have with us Alyssa Minwell. And at 17 years old, she is already demonstrating an incredible entrepreneurial spirit. She makes and sells some really awesome looking jewelry with beads for life. So welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, this evening we're going to cover lots of tips, tricks of the trade, and that sort of thing. But before we get into that sort of thing, I want to go a little bit more basic. And I want to talk about appearance in general. And it's kind of interesting because in the blindness community, as with any other group, you have people who have varying degrees of interest in their appearance. Some people can be a bit obsessive about it, and some people don't care so much. And in fact, I've encountered a few who are a little bit resistant to a discussion about appearance. You know, there's a sort of feeling of, I want to be judged on the inside. Why should I have to care about what I look like? People should come to know me for who I am, but what's on the outside shouldn't matter in the least, and I'm not going to pay any attention to that. So I guess the question I'd like to pose to you all is, why do we care about our appearance? Why should we care about our appearance? And we'll start with you, Maureen.
You know, while you were talking, you couldn't see me, but I was nodding my head in agreement with what you were saying, in agreement with your observations. I've worked for a long time. I'm sighted, by the way. I should tell
you.
Yeah,
she's in the minority here.
And I've worked my whole career in the blindness field. And I started working in direct service in New York City, and I did teaching in people's homes with adults. And one of the things that seemed to come up a lot but was never really acted upon was that conversation. Well, I I don't know. I think I want to look a little better, but I'm not sure. I don't want to seem like I'm taking too much interest in my appearance. And then I was a college professor for a long time, and one of the courses that I taught in depth, because I happened to be interested in it, was makeup application and how to do it and how to find techniques for it and how to look good for it. Because I believe it's not vanity, but how you present yourself to the world does make a difference in how people perceive you. I don't think it's vanity. I don't think it's even an obsessive interest in one's own appearance, but just sprucing up, being neat, looking good, maybe putting a little color in your face, just tells the world that you respect it. And you're telling other people that you come into contact with that you respect them too. And that's my attitude about it. I happen to be a big proponent of makeup, but we'll not go into that right now. My greatest day is when I can spend the afternoon in Sephora, and I have my young niece, and together we just go up and down the aisles and we check everything out. And I don't think that's vanity either. For me, it's kind of an art form. But I do think, again, not to repeat myself, but it's showing that you have respect for the people you come into contact with in everyday life.
Excellent. How about you, Kara? Any comments to add to that?
Well, actually, she just said it wonderfully, because I was about to say the exact thing she said, is that you show respect to the people that you're going to be with. When you take care of your appearance, not only do you show, you know, self-respect, but that you've taken the time to care about your appearance, but that you respect the people that you're going to be with. You know, I certainly understand people wanting to be viewed for who they are on the inside, and that's great. And in a perfect world, everybody would just naturally look, you know, immediately be able to see everyone for who they are on the inside, and everything would be great. And people do that now, but you know what? The fact is, you're also judged, or, you know, just you give across the experience of who you are on the outside as well. So, you know, what harm is there in saying, well, I care about myself on the inside and I'm a good person and everything like that. But, you know, there's certainly no harm in saying, you know, I care about myself on the outside as well. You know, one reflects the other, and they're both together. So, you know, it's, I think if people are going to say that, you know, they don't want you to care about themselves on the outside, I would say, well, maybe try it first before you want to make that choice. You know, if it's just a matter of, I feel I can't, or I'm afraid, you know, it's, you know, give it a try first. You know, and someone says, hey, you know what, I tried it and I don't really want to wear a lot of makeup. Well, that's their choice.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's interesting in that there's a bit of misperception. Some people say that blind people don't get snap first impressions about others, that we aren't, quote, judgmental because we can't view a person's appearance. And I don't think that's true at all. I think that we make observations, and from those observations, we draw our own conclusions. You know, if I'm doing an interview on the phone and somebody's crunching Doritos in my ear, I'm going to draw a conclusion about what type of person they are, or even just based on a person's voice. If they're talking, you know, maybe very softly, I might get the impression that they're shy and so on. So we're doing our own observing, and we may draw incorrect conclusions, but we're certainly drawing conclusions based on our own observations with or without vision. How about you, Alyssa? Do you have anything to add to this?
Well, for me, I have not been really into wearing makeup, but I find it fun to dress up in things that I have a lot of texture, like jewelry, for example. Every piece of jewelry I make, I try to have some sort of texture that is different, and there's a difference between each piece of jewelry. You know, each necklace, I can tell the difference. And the same with clothes. I like to pick things that have a lot of texture and things that I can feel, so that I myself can feel nice and pretty. But like with for me with makeup, I don't get the beauty out of it just because I can't see it. And I also find it to be challenging for me because I can't, you know, you can't look in a mirror. And I have not gotten a huge interest in the makeup part, but as far as jewelry and other things like that, I think people who are visually impaired should definitely have any, I mean, they should, everybody should dress up, I think.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point, Alyssa, and that is the inability for a visually impaired person to look in the mirror and get an idea of what something looks like. And you do something similar to me in that you feel the texture of clothing and you might make decisions about what to wear based on that texture or perhaps the shape of jewelry and so on. But there are some things that you don't necessarily know how you look without the input of another person. So, Kara, this one will go to you. How do you go about gathering people around you or getting information about how something looks on you, how your makeup is, and so on? You know, how do you go about getting somebody that you trust and sort of building your own style from the feedback that you get?
Were you directing that at me? You broke up a little bit.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. You know, it's interesting that you phrase it that way because I never really thought about the process of gathering people around me. People, you know, when I, you know, you're kind of always revising your style, but I mean, I always have at the very one person around me at any given time that I guess I'm lucky to have, you know, always a close person around. But, you know, as far as makeup, there are certain ways I do things which I pretty much have faith in by now. You know, just color choices that I like that I know go well with me. There are certain ideas of clothing styles that I know work well with my body shape. If I'm looking at, if I'm sort of browsing around in a store, whether I'm alone or with someone that I trust, I can kind of get an idea. I wish I could elaborate on this a little bit more technically, but it's a little bit difficult because it's a very visceral experience. I'll give an example. There is a clothing store, and I think this is what you're after. If it isn't, then stop me. But I used to live in Colorado for a while, and there was a lovely, lovely clothing store called Dragonfly. If anyone's ever in Boulder, they should check it out. And the woman who owns it gets one-of-a-kind clothes from around the world, or, you know, maybe two or three of a kind at most. But anyway, a lot of different things in there, and you can just go in there for hours and look around and just a lot of different dresses and such. And I would always go in there every spring, and we got to know each other well enough that I could just take a bunch of clothes in and just try a few different things on, and you know, and she would always give me opinions as to what it looked like, and because I had such a variety, you know, of things to try, you know, I could gain a lot of different insights, you know, and it was with someone that I knew, but it wasn't someone that I was friends with per se, but I did trust her opinion. So, you know, aside from just kind of the feedback that you naturally gain growing up, you know, with close friends like that, if you have someone that you can speak to that maybe is in the environment that you trust but you're not friends with as well, it can kind of go a long way. I hope that makes sense. And from there, I can kind of extrapolate on what would work with me. Like, I know for dresses per se, uneven hemlines work really well with me. And so when I find things that have an uneven hemline, you know, I might try them, whereas I, you know, someone who didn't know that might not be as inclined to try that. You know, it's, you kind of develop stylistic elements that you can go for. Is that sort of what you were after?
Yes, and you brought up a couple of interesting points that sort of reminded me of some things that I wanted to talk about in that. Having someone whom you know but isn't necessarily a friend can be a huge benefit, because oftentimes when you have friends or family or people who know you well, they do take a vested interest in your looking good, but they also can be a little proprietary in a way, in that they think, okay, you're my family member or you're my friend, therefore I have the right to sort of dress you in the style that I find appealing. And, you know, they don't always respect your own individual style. And I think it's really important to have that individual style. And you're absolutely right, Kara, in that it is something that you develop over time. And if you get enough feedback with enough different types of things, you will have an idea in your head of what works well for you and what doesn't. And there will be times when somebody says, you know, oh, something looks fabulous on you, but you don't feel good in that particular outfit, then it's probably not for you. There are some articles that we have here, though, talking about how you can shop for the right clothing for your body shape. We are all shaped quite a bit differently, and the way clothing is designed will look great on some and not so good on other body type. So you can check out the articles here if you want to understand sort of how to make basic decisions about how to do that sort of thing. Does anyone else have anything to add about sort of developing your own style based on feedback from other people?
This is Maureen. You know, I've been in an unusual position in my whole career in that I'm a sighted person who's often been, an impartial teacher, taught one-to-one, brought in to work with people on grooming, makeup, and so I've become quite adept at urging people to be who they are. I don't really have a preconceived notion when I work with someone, but I very much like to get at, tell me who you are. How do you see yourself? How do you want to look? Let's talk about that. And I know even myself, I have a little unconventional style, so I'm sensitive to that in other people. Nothing weird, just, you know, look different. And my mother still says to me, my mother's 85, and I'll visit her and she'll go, oh, you're wearing that, you know. So you know, it never goes away, and I'll say, yes, Mom, yes, finally, you know, I found my style, thank you. You don't have to comment on it anymore. But I do know that I'll ask people, you know, do you think you like tailored things? Do you like things that fit close to your body? Or do you like things looser? And, you know, there's a fine line between loose and baggy. And, you know, I do spend quite a bit of time drawing out of someone how they see their inner self. You know, what do you think you are? What kind of image do you want to present to the world? And then we go from there. And I really like to help somebody find out exactly who they are. And then we talk about the of wardrobes that you can build to become that. And also, I think color, too. We haven't talked about color a lot, but certainly your color and makeup, the color patches in clothing can make things really easy for you in terms of making it easier to create outfits. And it can really make how you look and how you present yourself almost become sort of a trademark. And not everybody can wear every color. And if people sometimes get too many different colors in their wardrobes, it becomes difficult to pull things together. Not only to identify all the clothing, but to pull together into outfits every day, because some people need to have outfits every day. So I really encourage people to get color analyzed. And I have a lot of blind friends, blind women. And one of the systems they said has helped them a lot is called Color Me Beautiful. And I know it's a little bit older, but I put that up in some of the documents on your website. And it seems to be helpful to people to really figure out what you are. Are you a winter? Are you a fall? Are you spring? Are you summer? And it's kind of a seasonal palette. And it's very helpful for people sometimes to do that kind of analysis. And I'm a winter, by the way. I have black hair, very pale skin, hazel eyes. You know, my color is not wishy-washy in the least. And so I've learned to accentuate that, you know, and build my makeup colors and the colors of my wardrobe around that. Now, I will tell you, if anyone who knows me in real life is listening, they would be laughing hysterically because I'm a typical New York girl. I wear black. I'll tell you that. I just wear black all the time. But there's, you know, different shades of black, too. So,
it's good to know about the colors. It doesn't mean you have to follow the advice.
Oh, please. I know. Do what I do. Do as I say, not as I do. I do think it's important to have someone, possibly, like you said, Ricky, impartial, who can really help you explore that part of you, because it's an important part of who many people are.
Absolutely. With color analysis, this is one of the more important things I think that I have done, and it doesn't even necessarily have to relate to makeup. If you hate makeup and you have no interest whatsoever in wearing makeup, you still, you know, should probably wear clothes out of the house, and it's going to be good if those outfits that you wear, for you to have some knowledge about what colors may make you look a bit paler, what colors may make you look kind of yellow. And that's kind of the idea behind color analysis is, and maybe this is something we haven't expanded on a whole lot, but why does it matter what color you're wearing? And my understanding is that it's, you know, you can look very washed out in some colors that don't suit you well. And for some that do, they can really pick up your coloring. You know, they may brighten your eyes. They may make your hair look shinier, that sort of thing. Do any of you know what the best way is to be to get a color analysis? Because they have some things online where you talk about your general coloring, you know, do you have blue eyes, do you have red hair, whatever, and you can get a color analysis done that way. But I would think that it's much better to actually do that in person with someone. Are color analysis consultants sort of, you know, you can't necessarily go to the phone book and look for one? What would you guys do if you wanted to find one of these?
Can I start?
Absolutely.
Well, I have a really fun way, and I've actually done this before. I got together with a really close friend of mine, and we would get together once a week just you know, to have a lot of fun and you know, girls' night. So we happened to be in a store, and I happened to find we were looking at a cheapo software bin, and found an application from Clinique. I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was one of the apps that you can, this was a few years ago, that you can take a picture of yourself and you can change different hairstyles, makeup colors, different it tells you about clothing shades, that sort of thing. And it does, you know, some color analysis just like that. And what we did was we just were like, hey, let's buy it and check it out. So we just made a night of it. And we took it home and we both, you know, she cited. And we both did it. You know, we took pictures of ourselves, and I had her describe it. We just wanted to partly see, you know, how fun it was, how good it was, and it really did a fun job. And we had a really fun time that we could spend the whole night and try all sorts of things. And you can print out different color choices if you like the colors that it tells you that you know go well with your eyes, with your skin tone, with your hair, and you can. Take them to stores, you can match makeup to it, you can match clothing to it, that sort of thing. So it can be a really, really fun way to do that without, you know, without, as you say, trying to track someone down.
that I shop myself. I actually I love Clinique's products in terms of makeup and moisturizer and things like that. And we'll get to all that fun stuff in a bit. But first, let's talk about hair. And this is one of those things that some women either really love or really hate to talk about. You know, oh, hair, that stuff that I kind of have to have, but I don't know what to do with it. Should I cut it? Should I color it? Should I do, you know, what do I do with it? But one thing, regardless of what you do with your hairstyle, you want to have hair that looks healthy. So we have an article here that talks about how to pick the right shampoo and conditioner and products to make your hair look the best that it possibly can. Do any of you have tips on doing that? And how about the old debate of cheap drugstore shampoo versus salon shampoo?
Laughing. This is Maureen, because I'm going through this in my personal life right now. The drugstore shampoo versus expensive shampoo debate. But I think, too, one thing to think about is analyzing the shape of your face, because there are definitely certain hairstyles that accentuate or go well with certain face shapes. There's a round face, perfect oval, can wear anything. A long face, an oblong face, really has to be careful about long hair that can drag the face down. There's a heart-shaped face, which means up around the eye area. It's wider than at the chin. It's smaller at the chin. And that type of face has to really watch that there is more fullness at the bottom of the face with the hairstyle to balance it out, etc. I would backtrack even a little and say it would really pay to go to a stylist and really work on a hairstyle that flatters one's face shape. Knowing your face shape is key. But for the shampoo debate, there's a lot of good drugstore shampoo now. You know, I admit I am tempted by the $30 shampoos and conditioners. And for a while, I always think, oh, if it's that much, it must be better. Guess what? It's not. There is a lot of really good shampoo now in the drugstore. Sometimes I'm amazed at the selection that's there. And there's really products now for thin and fine hair, to give volume, to give body. In the drugstore line, there is some really good stuff. I have not had tremendous luck with the adage, the more expensive is better in hair care. Makeup, that's a little different. But I don't know, our other panelists, they've had a different experience.
I tend to go in between. I use Pantene, which I get at the the drugstore, basically, you know, for a leave-in conditioner. But the other stuff I use is, I get it at one at Sally's Beauty, and the other I get at a health food store, and they're both kind of on the expensive side. So I kind of go in between. I go a little bit on the expensive side, and then where I can get stuff at a drugstore or, you know, Target or something like that, sure, why not, if it works.
I agree with you on that. Sometimes, like, things like Dove conditioner or Dove shampoo is better, but it depends on, like, I've had weeks where my hair is just dried out from the winter or whatever, and I go with Nioxin, and then there's other days like during the summer where it's nice and damp and my hair just lays nice just with Dove products or cheaper stuff.
And I guess that's kind of what we have to consider when choosing this stuff. There are a couple of articles here that talk about the ingredients in particular shampoos and how some ingredients can dry out hair, and you don't want to use those on color damaged or processed hair, and some that can add a little moisture, and you've got to be careful about that if you have fine hair so that it doesn't look completely flat and without body. But again, the idea is how do you want your hair to look? You know, if you have very curly hair, are you okay with it being really frizzy, or do you want to get something to control that sort of thing? And luckily, there are whole lots of choices out there. There are some great salon shampoos. I love Biolage. They make great products. And of course, there are some great drugstore shampoos as well. One thing that surprisingly a lot of people are not necessarily aware of is that your hair will remain healthier if you do get it trimmed every couple of months and get rid of the split ends. Whether you want to take anything off the length of your hair or not, it helps to just get rid of the ends that are dry and split and so on, and it makes the rest of your hair look nice and healthy, and that's always a good thing. So we've talked about hair. Yeah, go ahead.
There is a magazine, and it's available, much of it is available online, and I think it's accessible. It's called Allure, A-L-L-U-R-E. And every year, they have a Best of Beauty contest or evaluation or competition. And they have a team of beauty editors who evaluate hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of products, hair care, cosmetics, makeup, body care, skin care, everything. And they do an exhaustive evaluation and give their verdicts on what are the best products in many different categories every year. And it's a great resource to go through. And I do know they publish their Best of Beauty results online. And they give a drugstore version and an expensive version in every category. So it's not to force you to always have to choose the more expensive product. And I really recommend it. I think it's allure.com. And I just read the latest Best of Beauty, and there's some really great information in there. And that could be a good place to start reading and looking to get ideas about products that are moderately priced and higher priced in many different categories that readers say work.
That's a great point. Also, there are some knockoffs too. I mean, like one of the conditioners I use is from a company called Aura, which is a knockoff of Aveda. So you can get it for less. It's essentially the same product, but you can get it for less money.
That's actually very good to know. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants to spend $40 a bottle if they don't have to. And I agree that more expensive certainly does not mean better.
Well, yeah, and this stuff is being used at salons as well. I mean, the Aura stuff that I use, I mean, there was somebody at a salon who was using it. So I mean, it's not a cheapo product. It just happens to cost less than what it was derived from, basically.
Do you have any particular ingredients that you you probably don't stand there necessarily in the drugstore and have someone read the entire bottle to you, but you can actually look at some of this stuff online. For example, drugstore.com will publish the list of ingredients online for each of the things that they sell. So do any of you have ingredients that you pay attention to that you either must have in a hair care product or you really want to avoid?
I have very, very fine hair, and I look for products that are good for fine hair, that will help the fine hair get, soak it up a little bit better and make it look more healthy. So that's one of my big things is if it's good for fine hair.
All right. Well, we have talked about colors and hair and a little bit about clothing, but we haven't really said much about accessories. And for me, at least, accessories can sometimes be equally important as the clothing itself, because you've got something that you wear and it's cut really nicely and it flatters your shape, but it might be a little bit plain and you need to be able to dress that up in some way. So I want to talk about jewelry, even bows, ribbons, that type of thing, but let's start with jewelry. And I want to start with Alyssa on this one because she makes jewelry. First of all, I want to ask you what types of jewelry you like to wear. And the next question for you, so you'll be talking for a little while, is How do you go about making your jewelry, and what types of things do you consider as you make each piece? Uh-oh, did we lose somebody?
Can you hear me now?
Yep, there you are.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm fighting with my cat, and he's getting on the mute button.
My dog sent emails before, yeah. So...
So my personal preference is I like to wear a lot of charms, plain chain with a little heart or something on the necklace or bracelet or what have you. But my my mother and my grandmother, who are my biggest customers, love beaded jewelry. And I make things anywhere from... just a single strand of little bitty beads that are not very big or don't stand out much to a necklace. I have necklaces that are 15 strands of beads, and I have necklaces that are bigger beads and really, really long, and big beads that are shorter necklace and things like that. I also have different kinds of bracelets. One bracelet that I like, because it has a lot of charms, is a Christian bracelet, and it tells the story of the Christian story. And but I kind of go by what my grandmother and my mother like, because like I say, they're my biggest customer, and a lot of times they're right, and it's a big hit. What I do a lot of times also is I make, like with the 15-strand necklace, I make a matching bracelet and matching earrings. And for me, with selling my jewelry, I label each, I have 22 different color combinations for the 15-strand necklaces and their matching pieces. And so each color, I just have a number, and when I make a necklace or bracelet, I put a tag with its number on there. So I kind of keep track of the colors that way.
I was curious about that. Cool.
Yeah. And then with my beads, when I go to make the jewelry, I have kind of like, if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you get the little units that hold screws and nails, they're little itty-bitty drawers, and that's how I keep my beads into, are little bitty drawers from Home Depot and those stores. But they just, that way I can, and I label each drawer if it has a bead, I label it, so I know that a certain drawer is pink or what have you. But there again, I have to have a little bit of help, in every pink is a little bit different. And so, you know, you have to be able to separate and know which pink will go with which green or what have you. And a lot of times I do reference help from sighted people.
How about you, Kara? Are you a big jewelry fan?
I like jewelry a lot, and I think accessories can really, really make an outfit. If you don't mind, I'll just switch gears for just a second as far as accessories go, because I just have a tip that I think people would like, and that has to do with belts, because I think a belt, you know, can be a terrific accessory. On the simple side, it's such a simple thing, but it can really make an outfit. And, you know, it can fit in with jewelry as well, because you can have a belts that are, you know, fairly ornate versus ones that aren't, but even the simplest one can really, really help an outfit. As far as jewelry goes, I tend to go for simpler jewelry. I don't have super ornate tastes. I like stuff that's nice, and I tend to go for for me, I like silver tones mainly, but it just depends on the outfit. And if you're going to use, you know, jewelry to accent an outfit, I would say that, you know, one thing to note is just to have the jewelry consistent. In other words, if I'm going to wear a silver bracelet, I want to wear, you know, a necklace that's also a silver tone necklace. so that it matches. Don't wear, you know, something in yellow gold and then go wearing, you know, earrings or something else that's going to be in a silver tone, you know, like either silver or white gold. So I hope that answers your question. I got a little bit off track. I apologize.
No, not at all. That was perfect. And certainly there are more accessories than just jewelry. I know some people really like scarves a lot. Colored scarves can, you know, really dress up a dress and that kind of thing. Hats even are an accessory. And that's one thing that I've never figured out as far as how one would determine what sort of hat looks good and what doesn't. And, you know, do people still wear hats? That kind of thing. Maureen, how do you feel about accessories? What do you do?
I love accessories. First of all, I think your jewelry sounds fantastic, Alyssa. I love beaded jewelry.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Got to put those up on the website.
Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah, give her a link.
Are there any colors you prefer or your customers prefer? Or do you use any color bead? I'm just curious.
Well, a lot of it depends on where I am. I vendor at different shows, and it depends on where I'm at. Sometimes there's a lot of people, a lot of teachers who are wanting to buy stuff for their students or young children or what have you, and I sell out of all the really bright colored things and pinks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And other times I've sold the bigger, kind of more chunky necklaces for the, you know, big time, like, professionals and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest sellers is my Christian Story bracelet, just because of its story. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people look for is, you know, for me, I like to find a piece of jewelry that has a something meaningful to it, not just the color. But, you know, in this case, it tells a story.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad to learn about your jewelry. But, Ricky, you asked me about accessories. okay, I have one anecdote that I kind of live by. And the Duchess of Windsor, you know, the old Duchess of Windsor, used to say, before she went out of the house, she looked in the mirror at herself. And before she left the house, she took one thing off. She removed one piece, either an accessory or something. So that was her way of keeping accessorized, but keeping it simple. And I kind of always keep that in my mind. I'll look at myself and I'll say, just take one thing off, just one thing off. And I do, and it seems to work better. But okay, that's my mantra. But you asked about hats, you asked about jewelry. Hats are tricky, but you asked me who is a hat fanatic. I have so many hats.
The truth comes out.
Oh, I love hats. It's kind of a sickness, you know. I have a whole closet.
Hats and shoes, eh?
Oh, it's terrible. But hats, you know, I know are difficult, and you really do have to shop with someone who's going to tell you the absolute truth about how it looks on you. Because I know now pretty much what kind of hats look good. I mean, like a 1920s flapper kind of long cloche kind of hat, you know, looks good on me. Because I have like a Louise Brooks haircut. You know, Louise Brooks, the silent movie star, she had a bob, you know, bangs and short on the sides. And, you know, it's a look that I know works for me, but I would expect someone to be very honest with me and tell me if a hat looked totally ridiculous on me. That's when it's good to really take an objective person with you. But hats can look great. They look fantastic. And I think enough people are not brave enough with hats to try hats out. They are a great look. Straw ones in the summer, wool ones in the winter, and they're practical. But as far as jewelry, I think, again, you have to look at the totality of your look. And I agree with Kara that belts can really make a good look. And you can just take a plain dress or a plain tunic and put a belt on it. It can dress it up and look fantastic. But I think you have to look at the neckline that you're wearing, And look at how the necklace either works with it or obscures it. I think you have to really think about the earrings that you're wearing. And Kara touched on it too. Do they complement or do they clash with, do they fight with a necklace that you might be wearing? You know, sometimes too much ornamentation, too much, you know, a heavy earring with a heavy necklace, they just fight. And you really don't get the benefit of seeing each one on its own, standing on its own as a piece of jewelry. So I think, you know, I would be very careful about wearing too much around the neck, around the ears. I would definitely probably ask someone to give their opinion as to maybe should I lighten up? Should I take one or the other off? Can I wear both? How does it look? Feedback, I think, in that case would be helpful. That said, I have the world's largest earring collection. You know, you're bringing out all my worst secrets. It
gets juicier and juicier.
That's right.
Next week,
join us on Accessories Anonymous.
You know, really.
We do a whole show on accessories.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I have a special storage thing for my earrings. You know, maybe
I know what you mean.
You and me both.
it's a sickness. But you asked, so there you are.
All right. Well, now we're going to delve deeper into your closet of secrets, Maureen. We're to your favorite part of the show, because now we're going to talk about makeup. And you indicated a slight obsession with that earlier in the show. What's interesting to me is that I bet we all have a makeup horror story to share. I know that I certainly do. There is no putting on makeup for the first time and getting it absolutely right. And I think that many blind women are a little intimidated by the idea of putting on makeup because it is, you know, such an inherently visual thing. And it seems like, well, hey, I can't look at the finished product, so I'm probably going to mess this whole thing all up. And I certainly did. I remember my first attempt to put on makeup ended in my mom laughing hysterically and looking for a camera because I had blush covering my entire cheek area rather than just high on the cheekbones, and it was very dark and it was just horrid. But I have this habit of asking about five different questions rolled into one, but here we go. Why do those of you who wear makeup, why do you think that's important? And what would you say to someone who is considering wearing makeup for the first time? What makes makeup such a fun thing to do?
Wow. Maureen, did you want to take that or do you want me to go first?
Okay. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Kara. Sure.
Well, I mean, wow. For me, makeup can really finish you off. See, I don't wear tons of makeup. I tend to be of the school that less is more, to a degree. Though when you see someone with, you know, their nails done nicely and, you know, polished and that sort of thing, wearing just maybe a little touch of lip gloss or lipstick, you know, it finishes the outfit off, you know, providing that they're dressed nicely and they're put together, it can really make a nice appearance. And you can also, if you can make your eyes stand out more, if you can make features that you like about yourself stand out more, then of course it's going to be fun. It's going to be something that makes you feel better. So I think it comes, you know, to your own issue of feeling good and feeling sexy or feeling, you know, whatever you want to feel. You know, wow, it's just, you know, I'm having a great day. I look wonderful. You know, we all want to feel like that. And it can come, you know, again, to the issue of your own self-respect, your own just feeling good about yourself, or respecting the people that you're with. You know, you know, you didn't just roll out of bed. Your hair is done nicely. Your makeup is on. You know, you look good. So that would be my quick answer.
I used to have the, you keep saying things that remind me of stuff I meant to mention. And I used to have the strangest hang up about makeup. And that was, you know, my mom taught me to do makeup because she wanted me to know how to do it. And she felt that it was something very important. But, you know, makeup is described as being a feature enhancer. You can wear mascara to make your lashes look longer. You can wear blush to give yourself a little color in your cheeks. And I had this hang up for the longest time that if I didn't wear makeup, people were going to be looking at me and going, "Oh, there's that girl with the sparse lashes. Doesn't
it's
she?"
It's the opposite.
Know?
It's the opposite.
Oh, that's funny.
It's the opposite. You're more likely to get looked at in a bad way for having too much makeup than no makeup at all. People are
exactly.
not going to say, "Look at there. Oh, you know, look at her. She has no makeup." But yes. if you have too much, they're going to say, "Oh my God, look at her. She has too much."
Yeah,
makeup.
Nobody told her before she, yeah. you know, whoever yeah. her person is that's putting on her makeup for her, because you know we all yeah. can't do that ourselves, right? But it took me a while to recognize that makeup was a choice. It's not something that everyone has to do. Some people don't feel comfortable. They don't want anything on their faces. And some people do want to do that, but they want to do that in a way that enhances their features rather than saying, "Hey, look at me. I have makeup on."
Yes. You know, again, I'm nodding with what everybody's saying. And what you said is interesting, Ricky, that you didn't want to be the girl with no makeup that people were talking about. I find that interesting, but I get it. You know, I've worked with so many blind women through the years that I'm listening to what you all say, and I'm nodding because I said, "Oh, exactly. Those are the conversations that I've had with people." You know, when I was in a class teaching makeup application to a group of blind women, it's always an interesting experience because we start talking about makeup, but then it always goes into other things, how you feel about yourself, you know, what your life is like, you know, what's happening in your life, why you're in this class now. And, you know, I begin to understand what makeup means. It's a thing that we fear, but it's a thing that maybe we're curious about. And it's a thing that we think maybe we need to do. And so I always tried to present makeup, like you said, is a choice. And I always started people with the most natural look possible. Because the point is not to obscure your features. The point is not to change your skin color. The point is just to make you look as good as you can be. And that's all. So I would always start with talking about, you know, what are your feelings about this? Who have you had discussions with? I remember a class of women I taught in Germany, of all places, and we were all sequestered in this little ski lodge. It was in February. There was snow up to the roof, but it was a class of blind women who had been brought together for some rehab, and I came in to teach about makeup, and they were all so excited. Everybody was crowding around the table, and I had gotten a lot of free makeup here in the States from manufacturers and brought it over with me. They were just so excited about it, and I said, "Okay, but you know, you can't really put this stuff on thick. Okay, I know you're excited, but let's talk about how to make you look enhanced and natural, as you've all said." And there are techniques, sure, and I've spent my life trying to assemble this communal knowledge into some basic techniques to put on makeup, but I always tell people that they take the basic technique and then they go from there. And they do what they're comfortable with. But the way I teach people initially is just to put a little on and get comfortable with that. And you know, another thing that I used to encounter among some, not all of my blind female learners in class, was that there was some, there was always a lot of discussion ultimately about the eyes. You know, do I accentuate my eyes or do I not? Do I draw attention to them? I always thought that maybe this was not a feature that I really wanted anyone to look at, and you're telling me that maybe I should put on shadow that, you know, complements my eye color. So we always had a lot of very interesting discussions about that, and I gave really, really, really honest feedback. And I know there were some blind women in my class who had never really even thought about their eyes before, you know, 'cause they were blind and it was just something that they didn't think about. So when I talked about accentuating the eyes, it was kind of an exciting thing. So I always really loved teaching makeup to my blind learners because it always became something more than the makeup. It became talking about life and who you are and who you want to be.
That's incredible. I love that. One thing, before I ask this question, I'm going to say we're actually going to open this up for questions from the audience. So now it won't just be me babbling at you guys. You'll have other people to submit questions if they decide to do that. So we're going to open it up for questions from the audience. And while we're doing that, let's talk a little bit about nails, you know, manicures, pedicures. Do you guys do those things yourselves? Do you use that as, hey, manicuring is a bit of pampering and everybody deserves that? How do you guys all approach that, your hands, your feet?
I like to go myself. I like to go and get a manicure and pedicure done. My grandmother is a licensed cosmetologist and always saying, oh, I'll just do your nails or toenails or whatever. But I really like the idea of going out and getting that treatment done. I mean, I think people should have their nails colored. And because, you know, especially being blind, we use our hands and shake each other's hands or whatever, and on occasion I've shaken someone's hand and their nails were shredded up or whatever, and I mean, and for me, my nails, if I don't have nail polish on, they constantly break. I just got my nails polished about a week ago, and my nails grew quite a bit just in that little bit of time. And so for myself, I really do need I feel like I need the polish on my nails. So that's me.
Well, I do both. I do my own nails and I have them done. And I personally love nail polish, for one thing. I unfortunately have to keep my nails short because I'm also a musician, and I play guitar. And I mean, it would just be darn near impossible.
Yes.
And plus, they just wouldn't stay in good shape. It's a horrible scene, trust me. So I've tried everything, strengheners, you name it. But I just have to keep them short. So, I do my own polish, and as Alyssa said, I really enjoy having them polished and that sort of thing. It's nice to have a refined look, as we were talking about before.
Do you have a technique that you can share as far as how you do your polish without getting outside and polishing the cuticles as well and making sure that the coats are even, or is it just one of those things, practice makes perfect?
Practice does make perfect. I mean, I've been doing it for long enough that I just, and it's done. I mean, I can, and then I just have to let it dry. But basically what I do is, I've heard a few different techniques, even to the point of putting some tape around each nail. And I suppose if you have the time that you want to spend, if you want to take, a good while in an evening and do it, maybe it's your first time, maybe you could put some pieces of tape around each nail and take the time to do that. And then it would be a whole lot easier. You wouldn't have to worry about getting outside the lines, as it were. But for me, basically, I have a sense of the brush. I have a sense of the polish that I use, and I'll get into that in a second, because I actually have a really specific kind of polish that I've come to after a while of doing this. And I will just do the nails as if I could see them. I used to see, but I'll just do the nails that way, and I'll just do one hand really quickly. After I finish the hand, I'll take a paper towel or a Q-tip in, I think as Maureen might have said on the post that she had on the site, and just go, you know, within a little, put a little nail polish remover on it, and then go around each nail just to get anything that got where it shouldn't have gotten. So, and then I'll do the next, you know, the other hand, and then do the same thing. And the polish that I use is L'Oreal, and they used to have one called Jet Sets, and you can't really find it anymore except on eBay at this point. But and if you, I think pretty much if you will go with L'Oreal at this point, you really can't go wrong as far as the time it takes for it to dry. That's why I've kind of swear by this one at this point. It is just the right time, it seems, that they've got this down somehow, where it dries enough that if you accidentally get nail polish on the nail after you've done it, it's dry enough that it won't ruin it. You know, if you accidentally rub it with the paper towel or the Q-tip, you're not going to mess it up that much, if at all.
Oh, nice.
Exactly. It's just something about the time it takes for that to dry that you can go around the nails easily, and it's still moist enough that you can get it really easily off your skin. So it's just a certain timing issue, you know. And then you just, after, you know, you do both hands, you just let it dry for, you know, it's got to take a little bit more time to dry completely, obviously, like any nail polish would. But that works for me, just doing them as I would normally do them, you know, as if you had sight, and then just going around and cleaning the skin around your nail or the cuticle area if you've gotten any where it shouldn't be. And as I said, the L'Oreal polish tends to be the best as far that I've found anyway, as far as the time it takes to dry. It dries enough so that you can easily work with it, and it's but not too much. So
I hope that makes when I tried putting nail polish on the first time by myself, it wasn't just on my cuticles, but for some reason I was not able to get in the vicinity of my nails, and I had nail polish like on my upper knuckles and things like that. How do you get a good sense of exactly where is your nail without having your finger like on the bottom of the brush?
One way.
Do you want to answer that?
One way that I have found is helpful for some of my friends is to put the nail polish in the refrigerator, and the coolness of the polish on your fingernail is a really good cue to tell you exactly where it is on your nail. That's one way.
That's an idea.
Wow, also, that's a really
good
tip.
You could also take a Q-tip too, just a dry Q-tip, and kind of get used to the motion of where your nail is and what that would feel like. You know, that it's not going to be the same length as a brush you'll find in a nail polish applicator, but it's, you'll be able to at least kind of get used to touching your nail without, you know, your fingers touching it.
Right. Well, sadly, we are approaching closing time. I wish we weren't. I want to do about 8 or 9 more shows like this, because there's so many things that we didn't get to cover, and I really feel like discussions like this are very important, whether you choose to wear makeup or to wear nail polish or to do your hair in a particular way. I think that blind women need to know that they can. They shouldn't be prevented from doing anything that they want to do with their appearance because of a feeling of impossibility. And I love that you were all able to be here on the show tonight and share some really awesome tips with us. And I guess I'll go around the table, so to speak, and ask you all for any last comments, anything that you want to leave the people listening to the show with. And we'll start with you, Alyssa.
One thing I also do is, I mean, if something feels right to you, if something feels with a good texture or something like that, I think it's always good to have something more than just a plain t-shirt on or a plain piece of jewelry on. And I think that before anybody leaves their house or leaves for the day, they should have even a little stud earring on or something to add to their outfit. But I think that's my biggest thing.
All right. And you, Kara?
Well, remember, the best fashion statement you can make, regardless of what anyone else is doing, you know, is going to come from inside. So, you know, you can kind of take your cues from the outside world, so to speak, and then make something your own. You definitely can put on makeup. You can be fashionable. You can be cutting edge if you want to. You know, don't be afraid to ask if you're not sure about something. I mean, sighted women ask, you know, their friends all the time, you know, so it's just, don't be afraid to do that. You don't have to do everything by yourself if you don't want to, but you can. And that would be, you know, what I would say, just don't be afraid to be yourself.
Awesome. And how about you, Maureen?
That's exactly what I was going to say. be yourself, but be your best self. You are beautiful. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us. This has been a great show, and I'm totally serious in that I want to do about 8 or 9 more of these, so don't be surprised if you get a phone call from me. It's been fantastic having you guys. We'll put the wraps on this. And I, along with a few others, will be over in the Serotalk Tech or the tech chat room in SamNet. So if you're a subscriber, head on over there. If you're not, now's a perfect time to get a 7-day trial at www.sa2go.com. And until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.